You're listening to Filling Seats, the State of Enrollment Marketing in Higher Ed, hosted by StudentBridge. In this podcast, you'll learn what's working to grow, shape, and sustain enrollment at colleges and universities directly from fellow enrollment marketers, thought leaders, and ed tech innovators. Listen in for proven strategies to fill seats this cycle and beyond. Welcome to episode 16 of Filling Seats. In this episode, you'll hear from Lauren Finley, who is the Director of Admissions at Jacksonville State University, and she's also joined by Noelle Stovall, Associate Director. Jacksonville State is a public institution in Alabama. You'll hear them discuss the working relationship between them and their relationship with university leadership, how they differentiate their school in a state with such heavy competition, and the positive impacts for student access that were brought on by the pandemic. Let's meet Lauren first and then Noelle.
I am originally from Alabama. I'm not too far away from Jacksonville State University. We're located in Northeast Alabama. And I graduated from Auburn University, which is a larger four-year public school, and looked for a position a little bit closer to home and a little bit on the smaller scale. So I found that at Jacksonville State University. We are a four-year public university with about 9,500 students. Definitely attracted to JSU for the size and being that it's a regional serving institution, that was, I felt like, a good fit for me. But started as an admissions counselor. I was an admissions counselor for about 2 years and then had the opportunity to be promoted to assistant director. And then, interestingly enough, a year into being assistant director, I became the director in an interim status. And then they removed the interim tag and have been director for 3 years. So definitely an interesting trajectory. And it was all in the same time we had a tornado hit our campus and we had COVID. So it's been an interesting ride, but it's been fun. It's been challenging, but I've learned a lot.
Noelle, tell me a little bit about what you do in your background.
At JSU, I'm the Associate Director for Undergraduate Admissions and Recruitment. So I get to manage our recruitment teams, our admissions counselors, and some of our coordinators that have roles around recruitment under Lauren's leadership. My career so far, so I like to always start like when I was a grad student, because that's when I really fell in love with higher ed, had the student leader background and became a graduate student for our Office of Student Life, mainly doing orientation and first year student programs. After graduating, went on to work at a local community college, started as a career coach, so focusing on career planning for students with whatever they're going to, whether it was post-secondary education, the workforce, or technical training. So was there for a couple of years and then was hired at JSU as the assistant director under Lauren for recruitment and then moved to associate director about a year after that.
Since we don't typically have two people on a podcast, I don't always ask what's your working relationship, but I would love to know a little bit about how the two of you work together.
I'll say just as far as our division goes, for the past few years, I have reported directly to our vice president for enrollment management, who reported directly to our president. We just actually hired an associate vice president because our current vice president was promoted into a different role. So she's actually a dual vice president. Wow. I guess the reason I wanted to share that is because at JSU, we have a pretty direct line to the president. And Noelle and I work very closely together, and I think that we have support from the top, which is helpful. And she's very transparent and direct as really a coworker, and that helps me tremendously when I go and ask for anything of my associate director or my VP. Within my role, I also oversee student tours, campus visits, dual enrollment and processing. And then, of course, Noelle's role. And she's an associate director. She's overseeing a much larger scope of our office's work, which is recruitment. So my title is technically admissions and recruitment. So I oversee processing and all of the other aspects. And she's our go-to for all of the recruitment.
Noelle, tell me a little bit about your working relationship with Lauren and any of the members of your team and some of the people that you work with.
Lauren and I feel like have a really good working relationship. We've both been in higher ed around the same amount of time. So we've seen a lot of the change in higher ed and the change in admissions over the last several years kind of together. And I think that has informed a lot of what we do. Lauren is definitely like an ideas person. She comes up with great ideas. She's given tasks from above her. She comes up with how can we do this? Never really wants to like always do the same thing. Always looking for how can we do this? How can we do it better? How can we do it more efficiently? And she's fantastic at that and motivating our team to want to be there as well. I always call myself the backup dancer because I just am the one in the background, like making everything like work, just making sure everything looks good holistically, that we're taking the ideas, we're taking our initiatives and we're making them happen. So I get to manage our team of admissions counselors. We have admissions counselors that are broken up in geographic territories in the state of Alabama predominantly, and then in Georgia, and then our out-of-state students are also served by our team. We have one transfer admissions counselor, and then we have two coordinators on our team. One is a coordinator for out-of-state recruitment, and we partner up on all of the initiatives for out-of-state recruitment. And then we have a coordinator for recruitment, communication, and technology who takes all of these ideas of how we can connect with students and communicate with them and really makes them happen, keeps us up to date with best practices and what the students want, and really lays the groundwork for the admissions counselors as far as communication, whether it's print materials or texting students or emailing students, communicating with counselors so that when we're going into the schools or when we're going to events, a lot of that initial communication, that initial who we are, is already set out there. Another part of what I get to do with the assistance of my team is the print marketing for all of JSU recruitment. And that's, of course, in partnership with our incredible marketing team and graphic designers at JSU.
You're located in Alabama. You're a medium-sized institution. Just saying the state's name, you immediately think of one of the other big dogs, and you've got two big dogs in the state. You've got a lot of competition. So I would love to know, how do you differentiate yourself when you're not a big dog in terms of size and you're up against all this competition within your own state?
I'll start, and then Noelle, she's great at filling in my blank and does a wonderful job leading our team of admissions counselors. I just wanted to throw that in there. Right now, we are positioning ourselves in a campaign called The Friendliest Campus in the South, and it's really been a tagline for the campus since the 60s. That's really what we're known for, is when you get on our campus, you're going to have a very friendly atmosphere, an at-home feel. And so with The Friendliest Campus in the South as our campaign slogan, I think it just is very fitting. And for us, we feel like we can set ourselves apart from our competition just through customer service and through providing excellence in that regard and being friendly to our students. We just really take customer service very seriously on our campus.
And I feel like it's a place we really believe in. And it makes a difference to work for a place that you truly believe in, that you feel like is student focused and is a place where students from any background, whether they're a first generation college student, they've had several generations to go to JSU, regardless of where they're coming from, they can find a place in our community. And I think that sets us apart, because JSU is such a diverse and open community for anyone to be able to find their place, both academically and in the classroom, and find what they need in order to pursue the career they want, but also just as they are changing as a person and growing as a human. We offer a lot of resources for our students, and we also offer kind of a Goldilocks effect of, it's not too big, it's not too small. You have all the opportunities of a larger university. At the same time, you're going to get a really small university, in some cases, one-on-one individualized experience as well. We do really good at striking that balance. And that starts with the way we serve our students in admissions and that recruitment process, and making sure that they know that we don't just want to get them here, but we want to have them here and have them be successful. So I think what sets us apart is that we're not trying to be anything that we're not. We try to stay true to that character, Lauren said, that we've had since the 60s, of the friendliest campus in the South. And what that kind of boils down to is, there's a place for you here. There's a place for who you are, and there's a place for you to figure out who you're going to be and where you're going to go.
during COVID when so much was happening virtually. How did the school embrace that student service friendly mentality during a time when everyone is frustrated and transitioning? And were any major lessons learned during that time?
So as director of admissions, I will say that the first couple of weeks, it was definitely a transition, just getting our staff equipment and being able to work from home. But there was a lot of reassurance of our staff, and that was very important from a leadership standpoint, just to make sure that our staff felt secure and were supported in the workplace now that it is at home. But I think the biggest thing that we learned from that experience is you just have to meet students where they are. And one thing, and it's fitting that we're talking to you, because I will say one of the things that we did is we implemented Student Bridge, because we didn't have a wonderful online presence. Our website wasn't, and to be honest, it still isn't to the point where we probably wish it would be, but we knew that immediately, what are some needs of our students so that we can be a friendly face if we are not face to face? And our website is that. And so we were able to implement Student Bridge and provide a very friendly, easy to navigate online view book. And so that was one of the things that we did during COVID. But just in general, trying to figure out how we can meet students where they are and meet their needs. And so we just had to adjust accordingly. And a lot of the things that we did during that time, we are still using today, specifically with communication strategy, with text messaging and things like that.
Yes. And during that time, especially the beginning, we were trying to take all of our processes that we were doing in the office and take them into our home. So a lot of things went digital or electronic. That increased our speed in some cases for processing. And we've kept a lot of those processes so that we are trying to be one of the first in the mailbox for the students, or the first in the inbox for the students when they're getting that admissions decision or that scholarship letter. And that's allowed us to have kind of a quicker process there. With the COVID-19 pandemic, we started test optional admissions, and we have a no harm policy to where test scores can only help a student if they do decide to send them to us. That is something that we've kept around. And it's funny, we were just reading over some of our new student surveys from last year, and we asked them, how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected your college decision and your decision to choose JSU? And several students said that us going test optional made it more accessible to them, made university education more accessible to them. And that's always been a mission of JSU, to educate our region, to be accessible to the people that live here and in our surrounding communities, surrounding counties, even within the Southeast. And that just kind of enhanced that for us.
What would you say is something that you struggle with or that you wish that you could be doing better?
Right now, our focus is a lot on transfer because we have seen a decrease because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We are seeing in our state a decrease in students going to community college straight from high school, even going to college straight from high school. So we have suffered with transfer recruitment. And so that would be an area I think as we go into our next cycle, we're going to really try to focus in more on. The good news is that we have a great team here, and we actually just hosted a Transfer Champions event where we got some ideas from advisors at community colleges locally, and they gave us some really good ideas of just how to meet students where they are, because it is very competitive in transfer, especially. And so a lot of the things that we are able to stand out on the freshman side from, with test optional admissions or test optional scholarships, we aren't able to stand out as much in the transfer market. So that's an area where we're hoping to really beef up, but it is a difficult market at this time in our state with community college enrollment being down.
From the recruitment side, we have an incredible team and we have a really good process, but I feel like there are things like outside of our control that I wish I could just control that would help, whether it's having information sooner about events and how we can plan travel and what the schools are going to do. And that's, of course, been difficult the last couple of years because we've all had to been very reactive to whatever was happening in front of us. And our team on campus who were making decisions were super proactive, scientifically driven, and was great. But once you got off our campus, it was a little bit of like Wild Wild West. what is each school doing? Everything's a little bit different. So controlling for all of those variables definitely was a challenge in the last couple of years, but I think it's made us more resilient. As always in higher ed, you're like, I wish I had a bigger budget for travel or giveaways and things like that. I feel like our team who makes those decisions at GSU do a really good job of allocating what's available, but that doesn't increase what's available in general. So just more funding for higher ed, and that trickles down into our recruitment and getting more students, having that accessibility for university education, which increases their ability to impact their communities and their ability to impact their lives for the rest of their lives. It helps everyone when we invest in education.
Noelle, I would love to know your thoughts on the future of that traditional high school recruitment, because pre-COVID, we kind of all had it very nailed down. Private visits, lunch visits, school fairs, NACAC fairs. It was a very well-oiled machine. And then COVID happened and you've got all these different things. Some schools aren't letting you come in at all. What do you see being the future when the dust settles? Do you think that will ever return to how it was? Do you think students have lost interest for colleges coming and being in their space?
We were super, super comfortable. And then we all had to get real uncomfortable there for a little bit and figure out. I think it was a great challenge. But honestly, I hope it doesn't go back to the way it was, because I feel like even though it's been a challenge for us on our side, there's been more accessibility for our students, whether it's a virtual fair and they aren't able to travel to large fairs, or it's more fairs with smaller crowds that are closer to home for them, whether it's the test optional, allowing more students access to higher education. I feel like there are definitely some structure things that could come back that would make it easier as far as us as professionals. But at the end of the day, I think what is best for the students is what we need to go for. So when the dust settles, I am hoping that a lot of these changes, a lot of this accessibility doesn't go away, and I don't feel like it will. I feel like the test optional is here to stay. That accessibility, I feel like, is here to stay a little bit more than it was before. With that comes more competition. Students are able to apply to more places. They are applying to more places. That means you've got to get more personal with these students. You've got to speak to them as an individual. Each student group at a high school or in a certain territory is not going to be a monolith, and you've really got to have that personalized touch for those students. And that's where we've seen success, is in that personalized communication we do, whether it's through text or email or a phone call from the admissions counselor, from someone else at GSU, whether it's our associate vice president or vice president. That personalization is making a difference for us. And I'm not sure if that's something that we were doing as much before, because the students applied to a couple colleges. We figured we have a 50-50% chance of getting them. So it's been more work for us, but I think it's a good thing for the student in the end. And isn't that what we all want? What's best for them?
We'll be right back.
Want to know exactly how peer institutions are increasing enrollment? Check out three case studies in the show notes featuring three schools who've grown enrollment consistently over the past several years, including a private liberal arts college in Illinois, a small public school in Nebraska, and a large public institution in Georgia. Or visit studentbridge.com/resources to see how other institutions achieve more, like increasing campus tour numbers, engagement, yield, and beyond. Lauren, what do enrollment goals look like for JSU right now? Are y'all in growth mode? Are we trying to fill a deficit? Are we trying to maintain shape? What are the overall enrollment goals for your school?
We are certainly in a growth mode. We would love to continue to grow enrollment for freshmen and transfer, but we do understand that there are some limitations in the future, in the next 5 to 6 years, in regards to high school demographics. So I believe that we're also looking at how to stand out in the market online or for adults. And so we are being pretty strategic in the sense of creating some committees that are looking into goals specific to, of course, undergraduate traditional recruitment, but also online and post-traditional recruitment, because we feel like as we can continue to grow freshmen, that's great. But if we can enhance our growth among adults or among working population, that's where we're going to see a lot of success.
How many online programs do you have currently?
Undergrad, we only have truly one or two fully online programs, meaning everything would be available right. online. We have several programs that you could get most of your coursework done online, but that's what we're in the process of doing right now, is identifying programs that could be shifted into an online format. And COVID certainly helped do that, which is, as we're talking about COVID, and there are certainly many negatives and all of that, but using the positive outcomes from the pandemic, I can say that online education, having a very traditional campus, it really forced a lot of our faculty to think, okay, how can we be a little bit more innovative when it comes to this course? And that's really what we're seeing. And so we're able to capitalize on that and plug in new programs.
Noelle mentioned personalization. What does personalization mean to JSU, and how does that look? The way that Noelle was referring to it was, I would refer to as white glove service, identifying those really warm students and communicating directly to them.
From the start with our students, when we are sending their acceptance letter, when we are sending text messages, anything like that, something that is really important to us is to use the student's preferred name. And that is something that we have students come to events and they get their name tag and they're like, oh my gosh, you're using my preferred name. So that's something that we gather from students from the application point. And we use that preferred name in event name tags and our emails. We also use the student's preferred pronouns as well. And that is something, again, important to us, that we are communicating with that student the way that they want to be communicated with, and that we are honoring who they are, because we're trying to get them into a place where they're going to grow and become more of who they are. So certainly by using the name they prefer, I think that's huge. But the personalization really comes into effect for us through those connections. We want to have those conversations. We're transparent, whether we're talking about cost of the university education, if we're talking about what they can expect, any of those things, we're going to be transparent. We're going to have that personal communication. In a lot of our text messages, we are giving action items to students where it's not just us like throwing information at them, message after message after message, but asking them questions and saying, here's a little bit of information, even just a reaction to this. Do you want the link to learn more information about it? Do you have questions like about financial aid, or do you have questions about social fit, or do you have questions about getting involved? And we give them those options, because sometimes the students are like, I don't know what I have questions about. So we try to help prompt those conversations, which leads to those personalized conversations and getting their questions answered. Something fun that we do that some universities likes, others don't, it fits really well for us in that friendly conversational vibe, is the use of emojis when we're texting. So we tell a student, send back a certain emoji if you want to talk about this topic or if you want this link. And that has given us a really good percentage of response when we are sending messages like that, rather than just sending like just a blurb or just here's a bit of information, but they don't know what to do with that. So definitely give them that opportunity for it to be two-way communication.
And that makes it really fun.
Yes. And sometimes with our transfer students, because we know some of them may be traditionally aged college students, some of them may be adult learners, sometimes we'll use emojis and sometimes we'll do a simple yes, no. I mean, that still helps just to open that door of, this is not just me talking at you. This is us talking with each other. We recently helped our graduate studies department with some of their communication planning emails and text messages. And even amongst those students who are predominantly all adults, like, they still want that two-way communication. They still want the opportunity to say something back.
We do have specific staff for students, whether they're freshmen or transfer or dual enrollment, so that every one of our students has an admissions counselor assigned to them. And in their acceptance email, it comes from their admissions counselor. They can respond. And so it feels very personal, although it is automated. But I will also say that we implemented a position called our coordinator of recruitment communication. And that has been an incredible drive for us to be able to be more personal with our outreach. We can be very specific to students based on where they are in the funnel, whether or not they've submitted their FAFSA, even if they've responded to a survey that we sent them to see how interested they are in attending JSU, we don't burden students with sending them communication that is not relevant to them. We are very specific with our communication. We have over 80 communication plans, and we actually just created one for students 25 or older. And that allows our 25 and older population not to be getting information that would be more specific to a traditional undergrad student about getting involved on campus, because it may not be as relevant to them. So we're just trying to segment our communication in a way that is very personal, and it's not, we want them to know that we know who they are. We know where they are in the process, and we want them to see that. So we utilize a lot of things that Noelle was saying with the emojis and are very specific in our outreach.
When a lot of these conversations come up with other schools and talking about personalization, sometimes it's like, oh, we have a list of 50 things that we want to do, but we can't do them because we, you know, don't have the budget, we don't have the staff. And so it seems like y'all have really made this a priority and you're truly doing it. I mean, props to y'all. It seems like you're doing a great job. If you had to pick, you could only do three things, what would those be?
Text messaging has transformed how we operate as an office. Not only is it great for students, but I think it's helped our admissions counselors have more joy in their job. Because I will say, I started as an admissions counselor before texting was a thing, and the cold calls and just the emails without any kind of response, it just was frustrating and it's time consuming. So text messaging has allowed our staff to have a burden lifted off from them, and they can actually have meaningful conversations. So I would say texting, number one. I will say student search. We do utilize a third-party vendor for student search, and that is an implementation from 2018. And it's allowed us to reach a much larger audience and really saved us in the time of COVID when we weren't able to get out into the schools and collect inquiries. We were able to already have inquiries, and so I don't know how we operated prior to student search, to be honest, but now that we have it, it just has really transformed our admissions counselors' approach to setting up private visits, because they can target schools where we have inquiries already versus having to go out and gather those.
And I would say as a third thing, it's kind of like A and B. So we do a couple things for accepted students that I love. They are so fun. Our students seem to really enjoy it. One is having an accepted piece that's Instagrammable that they can take a picture with, use the hashtag, put it up, show how excited they are, kind of make their announcement. So twofold, it's something fun for them. We even put a little confetti in there. So fun. And then two, they put it out there. And then that is marketing JSU. A second thing we do for our accepted students is a yard sign, so they can pick that up at their awards day or when they come to orientation, and then them and their parents or their grandparents can put it out in their yard and tell everybody that they're going to JSU. And again, it's something that we get to do to celebrate our students, which we love. And it's also something that we can do to market for our next classes that are coming from those same communities as well.
Thinking about other institutions, what are some things that you think other schools are doing really well with?
I would say out-of-state recruitment. We really only focus in on our region, specifically in the southeast of Alabama and Georgia. And we have been able to branch into some markets where we've seen potential for growth, like in New Orleans or in the Florida Panhandle. But I will say, as we are moving into Conference USA in athletics, which is a big deal in Alabama, we may at some point need to expand our outreach. And so a lot of other schools are doing a really good job with expanding just their marketability of their institution out of state. And so we still, I think, have that as a challenge. We really only have statewide and Georgia-wide awareness. And so brand awareness in a much larger market is a challenge that hopefully we'll be able to accomplish in the next few years as we get into this new conference. But other schools, like you mentioned earlier, the larger schools within our state, they've been able to manage to do that. So that'll be something that we need to look at.
I was going to say the branding aspect of it. I feel like that helps recruitment just when people know who you are by name. When people hear Jacksonville State University, if you ask most people in Alabama, Georgia, they're going to know Jacksonville, Alabama. But there's other universities that have Jackson or Jacksonville in the name. We get their emails sometimes. So just that brand awareness, and our in-house marketing team has done a fantastic job of gauging that, putting in ways that we can grow that brand awareness as far as like the look of JSU, the friendliest campus in the South tagline, all of that. They do a really good job of getting that out. But of course, that comes again with budgetary needs to make all the print materials and have the billboards and have the Spotify ads and all of that, that creates brand awareness away from our backyard. And that backyard is certainly growing, which is really exciting. We're seeing more out-of-state students this year than in previous year. And those are students from every different kind of background from these geographic locations coming to JSU. So we see that's growing. But to continue to have it grow, we definitely need that support.
And what are some things that you think other schools could be doing better?
We just recently got back from a conference, which is always so energizing, so exciting to connect with people from across the state. I think one thing that JSU does really well as a university is the connection between our employees and those that are at the cabinet level. I feel like we have support that other schools don't seem to have. We have seats at tables and open doors that just don't seem to be there at other institutions, especially larger institutions. So to have the camaraderie that we have at all levels at JSU, to have the kind of working relationship that I have with Lauren as my director, but even with the AVP and the VP, to know those people and to be able to have conversations with them, or just with my team, having an open door and having weekly meetings and all of those things make a big difference in the culture of JSU. It lends to that friendliest campus in the South feeling that we have and that it was so true to our character. So I would say that JSU does really good when it comes to culture of the people who are working here. Higher ed is higher ed. There's always going to be those challenges. There's always going to be those frustrations, but we know at the end of the day, everybody on campus really cares about the student, and we also care about each other and what we are doing here. We believe in.
I definitely agree with that. In the age when we're seeing so many vacancies in higher ed and just the difficulty of filling positions, I think we've done a good job combating that. I would add that we are very lucky that we do have that position of communication coordinator. It's something that a lot of schools do not have yet, but I think in this age of digital recruitment, it's very important for campuses to consider adding that as an investment within their recruitment team, because it's just honestly so much more intentional. You can build so much many more relationships via your automated communication. If you have someone who that is their primary job, they're not only setting up the communications, but they're just ensuring that the communications are accurate and relevant. So that is something that I definitely think we have an edge over our competition on. And actually at the conference that Noelle was talking about, had many people coming up to me asking me for that position description because they feel like they need that assistance. And we have a great person in that role, and Noelle manages that role, and she does a phenomenal job working with that role and ensuring that we're on track and we have a schedule. But just really investing in your outreach and making sure that it is consistent and correct is super important.
And I'll say that was definitely an investment and also a sacrifice. So we, in trading for a communication person, that person still recruits a few high schools. And we took out an admissions counselor position and a secretarial type position for that. But it has certainly paid off for us in so many ways. And the thing for us too was having the right person in that role. And we have a phenomenal team member in that role who truly loves technology, loves communication, loves people, and that makes a huge difference. She's very in tune to the voice of GSU. Whether you're getting a text or an email, it's always going to sound like it's coming from the same person, even though different people on our team are writing that. She's pulling it all together, and GSU has a very distinct voice that has certainly paid off for us.
We just went through 2.5 years of incredible change. Coming through the other side, what are some things that you think are going to change a year, 5 years, 10 years from now?
I would say the type of student that we're working with, it's not going to be a traditional student right out of high school. We're going to have to adjust to this new era of students, not only coming straight to college as adults, but returning to college and finishing degrees that they started years ago and wanting to come back and complete. It's also understanding that there's competition outside of higher education. You have Google and you have these other companies offering certifications, and you know, there are actually jobs paying almost more than students getting a degree out of higher ed. So understanding that the competition isn't just among other community colleges or other universities, we have to set ourselves apart in a corporate market as well. So being creative with considering what kind of certificates you can offer, or micro-credentials, mini semesters, business partnerships, all of those things, I think will be the focus over the next 5 years during a time when our traditional age students will most likely be declining in quantity.
The students will be different in who they are, where they're coming from, but also what they want out of the workforce. I think with COVID, you saw that people could work from home, that people can have their own businesses and make their own living without so many of the traditional tracks that we've had in the past. And I think that's a great thing. I think we do need to look at what the traditional work week looks like, what traditional jobs look like, and make our education system meet that and what students are going to be wanting 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 25 years from now, and so on, because it's going to be different than from us and from our parents.
What is an app or a tool that you could not live without?
Canva has been huge for us. Being able to have the major items in recruitment being created by our graphic designers in-house is amazing, but being able to just put together a social media picture or post together by some of our team members in our office, or putting together a postcard or something like that, just having that ability has really been great. And it's allowed us to have more autonomy and be in more control of the voice that we want recruitment to have. So Canva is awesome. We also use a texting app from Cadence Mongoose, and we love it so much. It allows us to be available to our students when they need us.
I will say Teams, Microsoft Office campus here. We not only use Teams, obviously, to communicate back and forth and meet, of course, but we also use it to connect with students virtually through what we call Cocky Chats. We use the Microsoft booking system for that so they can reserve time when we are available, and it will not show up time if we're not available. And we've created a lot of different groups where we'll be able to communicate based on certain things. And we've used it for electronic processing. So that has been huge for offices, especially when we were away from the campus during COVID. We would share spreadsheets or notes involving any kind of process if it involved second level approval, maybe from our student conduct office. And so that has just been a game changer post-COVID of how we communicate across campus and really broken down a lot of silos. And it's just so much easier than an email. So we love Teams.
If you could go back and give yourself advice, let's say maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, what would it be? And we'll start with Lauren.
I had a very interesting trajectory to the position that I am in now. And I think being a young woman in a role that, you know, is not typical for a young woman, especially at the trajectory that I was in, almost had a sense of imposter syndrome for a while. And so probably overcompensated a lot and just tried to work myself harder, had to prove myself over others and things like that. Obviously, I learned a lot through that process. And thankfully, I ended up having a wonderful mentor, and then having wonderful staff that formed around me after I became director or during that whole process. My advice would be to believe in yourself, understand your worth, and then definitely challenge yourself and learn and grow, but don't feel like you have to overcompensate for anything. Enjoy where you are and have goals and everything, and be pushed to reach those goals. But don't feel like you have to prove anyone else if you're proving yourself. Second, I would say, is to find mentors, because as women especially, we need to have good mentors, male mentors as well, but seek out people that you see are doing a wonderful job or that you look up to, because they're not only doing a good job, but doing it with integrity and all of that. And I think that's across the board. It's mentors who maybe have positions above you or similar to you at other institutions, and even and just in the office.
Noelle, what about you?
I had a mentor who once told me we can do anything, but we can't do everything. And that has stayed with me so much, because we can do anything. And I'm lucky that I had parents that told me, as a woman, you can do anything, you can be anything. And that's wonderful. And then you get into certain environments and you feel limited. And honestly, you're human, so you can't do everything. You can do anything that you put your mind to and all of that, but you can't do everything. And it's okay to not do everything. Something that I wish I had earlier in my career, and then something I try to tell the team members that I supervise, is it's okay to have boundaries. It's okay to be human. Take your annual leave. Take your sick leave. It's okay. You don't have to give me a great reason for the fact that you're taking an annual leave day. Like, it's your day to take it. Set those boundaries. Sometimes, especially when you get into positions like I or Lauren have, you take some things home with you. That's just the nature of it. But as you're beginning your career and that's not as much pressure on you, set those boundaries then. Don't take things home that you don't have to. There's definitely a balance. And we certainly have a culture in our office of doing more, of volunteering to help others, of wanting to go the extra mile. But there can be balance in, I want to go the extra mile, but when I need to recharge, I need to recharge. That's something that you can absolutely do. I would say to women, you know, help other women. When you get to a place that you have dreamed about being, turn around and help those behind you. I know there's plenty of quotes that express that better than I have, but help those that are trying to be where you were, and remember that at one point you dreamed of being where you are. You may not have envisioned this exact thing in your life, but you had those desires to be something, to be able to do a certain thing, help people, whatever it is, and remember that you wished for this at one point. And then the other thing is just make friends. It's okay to have friends in the workplace. It's a great thing to have friends in your workplace, because you have so much time with them. And it's important to create a community where you are and to make those friends in your workplace and also on the road. As so much in admissions is traveling on the road, especially early in your career. So it's important to make those friends, make that community away from your home community. And we have some team members that are really great at this and that have created that community even away from our office.
I also think professional development is very important, and budgets can be straining. You can gain professional development via a free webinar or whatever that may be, reading an article. I have had the privilege of being involved in several organizations and getting involved on different committees, getting involved on committees within JSU. Like Noelle was saying, we definitely have to have our boundaries, and we cannot overexert ourselves to the point where we are taking things home with us. And I certainly have suffered from that in the past. But if you are growing as a professional and you're allowing yourself to dip your toe into an area outside of admissions or outside of the job you typically do, and you're wishing to get to that next point in your career, I think that's a great way to start. For example, I had to have budgetary experience in order to get my job. And thankfully, because I was a member of an executive committee within a state organization and managed a budget for the conference that we planned, I could refer to that as budgetary experience. So just little things like that can certainly help you stand out amongst others in the field. And so when you can, try to volunteer, but just keep it balanced.
This is the Filling Seats podcast, hosted by StudentBridge, where we help enrollment teams achieve more by fusing authentic storytelling with industry-leading technology and personalized digital experiences. If you're looking to attract more, amaze more, and achieve more, visit studentbridge.com. To connect with this episode's guest, check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. For more information about the podcast or to let us know you'd like to be a guest, visit studentbridge.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.